People lined up in long lines outside of Harborside, one of the best-known marijuana dispensaries in California. This week on Techonomics, host Jason Middleton speaks with the San Francisco Chronicle's cannabis editor about this, the marijuana market, and how state government is hoping to keep tabs on it. That conversation starts now.
Hello and welcome back, and thanks for listening. This week, marijuana, as in Prop 64, recreational marijuana being legalized. Well, that was the plan, at least, and then Jeff Sessions happened. U.S. Attorney General Jeff Sessions is continuing his decades-long crusade against marijuana. He and the Trump administration are rolling back Obama-era policies that allowed for states to determine their legal pot fates. But, Jason, rolling back Obama-era regulations that protect rights? Yes, I'm afraid that's right. It's a rinse-repeat of the same tactic used on net neutrality. Anyway, I digress. Coming up is part three of my discussion with San Francisco Chronicle cannabis editor David Downs. We talk about the marijuana industry in California as we get going in 2018. I also reveal that in a past life, I ran a marijuana trade magazine in Los Angeles for a while. Hashtag Kush. Here's part three of four of our discussion. Where are the innovations coming from? You must have seen something cool happening here.
Innovation's happening across the board because you have an industry that's been exempt from science, technology, research, development, all that stuff, and the pressures of the marketplace for 40, 50 years. We're talking about industrializing a crop that missed the Industrial Revolution. So just on the supply side and just on the growing side, how things are done now are going to look archaic in a year. On the retail side, you've had businesses that were zoned to the bad parts of town and didn't want to put any capital investment into the building because they didn't know if the feds were going to raid it next week.
Yeah.
Versus these businesses are now moving into the marina. They're trying to get into the Westfield Mall. They're trying to get into the Hotel Standard in L.A.
Yeah, talk about that one. That's going to be a pretty cool one, right?
We'll loop back to it. But yeah, and the bottom line is they can put money in. They can take investors on. They can aspire to give consumers the Apple Store experience in retail. So across the supply chain, from the farm to the store to the products on the shelves, everything is in rapid flux and it's innovating at a breathtaking pace. And everything is going to look quite different in a year or two than it does now.
Okay.
Back to the Standard.
It reminds me, you said the Standard Hotel in downtown Los Angeles, and back 10 years ago when I was living in L.A., my favorite strain was called L.A. Confidential. It was half sativa, half indica, right? It was like right down the middle.
Yeah, L.A. Con was a great strain. It sort of got passed by the times. I'm hoping to see it come back. That L.A. Affy is certainly still around. And for some reason, Los Angelinos love that sedative strain.
Yes.
Something about sitting in traffic for 2 hours a day each way makes you really need L.A. Confidential the time you get home.
Amen, brother.
And I've been missing it from the market. I'm great. I'll be looking forward to see it coming back. And one thing to note is regulations create appellations. So if you have authentic L.A. Confidential from L.A. and you're selling it, no other competitor in the marketplace can stick, you know, L.A. County, L.A. Confidential on their labeling, or else they're violating the trademark and appellation law of California now.
That's a fantastic, very French way to go about business, isn't it?
Exactly. So the champagne of L.A. shall remain champagne of L.A.
I'm just glad you knew what I was talking about because it did. It disappeared off the radar. And
it did.
Yeah, L.A. Con. Standard Hotel, you wrote a recent piece about that too. Paint a picture with words for me what you think is going to happen with the dispensary that will be in that hotel.
Well, their plan is you walk into the lobby of the Standard Hotel in Hollywood, actually West Hollywood.
Sorry, we
you
know,
check
yeah.
in and you get your keys and they go, by the way, make sure to check out the Lord Jones dispensary in our lobby. And you look to the right and there is a guy at the door of a chic building and he's checking IDs. And inside is a dispensary that you've never seen. Luxurious, chic, edgy, design forward and filled to the brim with really boutique cannabis edibles and other products and topicals that are going to be geared toward, you know, the Grammy Award winning audience, the Academy Award winning audience,
right.
Professional sports and athletes, which is the wheelhouse that the edibles brand Lord Jones currently operates in now.
It's funny you mentioned that crowd. That would be awesome to see them swing through WeHo on their way down to the theater on Hollywood Boulevard and going to their award ceremony.
And the Standard and Lord Jones are talking about a multifaceted partnership. They probably regulatorily will not be allowed to put cannabis-infused mints on people's pillows, but they're just starting to think about how they can use the brand vision of the Standard and combine it with the product vision of Lord Jones to really set the bar for partnerships in cannabis for the next 5-10 years. It's very exciting to see a really established brand like the Standard even touch cannabis.
Yes.
And we're in the middle of this trend of more and more blue chip brands in different sectors starting to go, you know what? Our consumers are okay with this. We're okay with this. What should we be doing to bring value to the company and better serve the people who already love us?
You know what seems like another possible fit would be Whole Foods. Or is there still a taint on this as far as an industry when it comes to brand? The Standard is known for being edgy, right?
Yeah.
And so that's fine. That one makes sense to me. And I want to come back to Lord Jones in a second because I want to talk about edibles. But as far as marketing goes, as far as potential brand partnerships, are you seeing any other possibles that maybe need to be considered?
People don't even know how many big Fortune 100 or Fortune 500 companies are already touching cannabis, at least at arm's length. So for example, Miracle-Gro, the conglomerate that does all your gardening supplies, they've been snapping up cannabis-focused horticultural companies for the last 5 years. And so people who are buying cannabis supplies don't even know they're buying them from Miracle-Gro right now.
Mm.
Microsoft is powering data for a number of cannabis places. Instagram is the number one place that cannabis businesses do marketing. It's ground zero for doing any of sort of your announcements.
Huh.
And so it's a kind of a guerrilla effort to colonize Fortune 100s with cannabis businesses such that people don't even know until it's too late that these businesses are here and operating and enmeshed in the system. But back to your point about, you know, Whole Foods and those types of brands, you're seeing a sort of backing into it. Sort of cannabis for a long time has been associated with like wellness and health and alternative medicine and earth-based solutions to your health problems. And that is sort of backing into what Whole Foods does. And so a lot of people who are doing cannabidiol, CBD, no high formulations are selling them in Whole Foods-like packaging. And so, you know, the cannabis industry is rushing to make itself available to the Whole Foods of the world in terms of quality, consistency, and packaging. And they're just waiting for Whole Foods' competitors to go, all right, we're ready to compete. We're going to bring some of your packages onto our shelves. And indeed, places like Rainbow Groceries, local sort of counter programmers to the traditional food stores are already stocking CBD products and pet treats.
Yeah, right. And I see tinctures being an opportunity there, you know, under the like eyedroppers under the tongue kind of things for maintenance during the day.
Yeah, much less offensive formulations than a pungent flower you got to light on fire and bother everybody. You know, a pet treat or a tincture or a lozenge or a skin rub. I mean, nobody can really find offense with something like that. Nobody even knows there's cannabis in it. And so it's ending up like a ginseng or a lot of other herbs that are becoming trendy to stick in different products. And hopefully they have some effect.
Lord Jones, and new to me, I don't know the brand, but you said this is an edibles company. Let's talk about edibles. My personal front page is I had an edible, a cookie, had about half of it before the races started at Santa Anita, didn't speak again until the seventh race. What kind of regulations and how are they going to address edibles? Because they can get potent out there.
Edibles are the number one concern of regulators because they've heard it from other states and consumers are obsessed with them and people can have the most amount of trouble with them. They've heard them from other states because Poison Control Center calls went up after legalization kicked in and people had trouble eating edibles and they thought they were freaking out and they would call the Poison Control Centers. Consumers, many of whom never want to smoke again, many of whom have no tolerance, many of whom are coming to pot for the first time or returning to it after 40 years, they're attracted to small edible items for some reason, even though that can be one of the more crazy ways to experience the drug. And so regulators have seen all this and they said, okay, edibles, you're our target. And what they've done is set a 10 milligram per serving cap of THC, tetrahydrocannabinol, the main active ingredient in cannabis. So you can only have up to 10 milligrams of THC in a serving, and then you can only have 100 milligrams of THC in the whole package. Now, don't get me wrong. You eat a 100 milligram candy bar with no tolerance, and you're going to go on a journey.
Yeah, no kidding.
And some people will be going on journeys because they refuse to read packaging. But the state is doing the best it can to at least help consumers make smart choices. Scoring things into 10 milligrams, capping that at 100 milligrams a package, labeling the heck out of them to let them know that you eat a little bit and wait 2 hours, set two timers, one to let you know that you can eat more and one to let you know that you are, in fact, under the influence and that's why you're doing whatever you think you're doing at that moment.
Right.
So
maybe you're
forgot.
Building something. Maybe you woke up in a yurt.
Maybe you just made half of the Millennium Falcon in Legos and you're wondering, how did I get here? And then they've crafted a bunch of rules around what type of edibles you can do. Right now in California, we live in this Triassic period of edibles variation and diversity like you've never seen. Every possible thing in the world has been infused. Pizzas, sushi,
yep.
You name it. That's all going to start getting culled down. The like regulations are the asteroid slamming into
right.
the dinosaur planet of edibles right now.
Right.
And very few will make it through that extinction funnel.
Right.
So no dairy, no seafood, nothing with added caffeine, nothing with added alcohol.
I've seen things that look like Crest strips.
Yeah, those breath strips are really nice. The upside is that edibles are going to move away from being dominated by the guy who can do 1,000 milligrams of THC. He's set the curve and been the market voice that
right.
the medical markets listen to.
Right.
Now they're going to be dominated by Moms and Marin, and they want 1 milligrams of THC, 2 milligrams, 3 mm-hmm. milligrams, 5 milligrams in a tea or something that's super innocuous and they can control for sleep and pain and stuff like that. And so prohibition actually jacked up the potency of pot and edibles, and regulation and normalization and chasing the bell curve of Joe Blow consumer is going to drive that potency right back down. And so it's going to be a lot harder to find stuff that's going to get you in trouble.
You know, we did a story on the Palo Alto Tea Club. So it used to be ladies who lunch. Now it's ladies who tea. And they get dressed and they have wonderful time and they have a chamomile with just a bit of THC in there.
Yeah, that strikes me as one of those thou doth protest too much scenarios.
Right.
Like, we get it. Too many people labeled cannabis like a low class, low rent, you know, drug for degenerates, and that's not true. But now the needle has swung so far over to the other side that, you know, you got ladies with fancy hats putting on fancy music
right.
and doing little tea parties so they can have 1 or 2 milligrams just so they can say, like, I'm still a good person even though I interacted with a molecule from a plant.
Right.
You know, and so I think that's one of those swings. It's, you know, it counterbalances all the negative stereotypes, but it almost is like, really? That's okay. Is, sure. Ooh. If that's what, how you
yeah,
want to spend your Saturday.
That's but your thing, I guess.
I think the future is integrating, metabolizing cannabis into American culture, starting with California culture, in a safe, effective, productive way. You know, we're always going to be Americans. The business of America is business. We're not going to stop getting up and going to work and taking care of our kids and trying to live right. healthy, full lives. We're just going to start doing it with a healthy relationship to cannabinoids.
That was David Downs. David is the Green State editor at the San Francisco Chronicle. As we mentioned at the top, the feds want to roll back state-level protection when it comes to legalized marijuana in any form. Perhaps they think the very real opioid epidemic is not as important as scientifically proven benefits of marijuana. Coming up is our final segment with David Downs, so we hope you'll stick around for that. This is Techonomics, and I'm Jason Middleton.